everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to the UBS Conversations podcast channel. Today we are joined by Phil Orlando, head of the client portfolio management team at Federated Hermes. Phil, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on during World Autism Month.
Of course. Thank you so much for being here. So typically you join us to share updates on the markets and the economy, but today, as you said, we're focused on World Autism Month, which takes place here in April. Can you share with us some background on your connection to autism and why this month in particular is so important to you?
Certainly. My son Jack, who is 31 years old now, 32 in June, is profoundly autistic. And he is my oldest son, my oldest child. I've got two typically developing daughters. And so my wife and I have been deeply connected to advocating for our son and children with autism generally, since we got Jack's diagnosis in the early 1990s. Now, Siobhan, to give you a sense of how this thing has grown and exploded might be a better word, we've gone back and done our research, the incidence of autism, you know, going back to 1970, let's say, you know, 50 years ago, was 1 in 5,000 children, right? Pretty rare. Today, and the most recent data we've got is from last year, 2023, Autism Speaks, one of the key advocacy groups in the industry, reports that the incidence of autism is now 1 out of 36 children. Now, to put that into some sense of mathematical perspective, going from 1 in 5,000 in 1970 to 1 in 36 last year means that we're experiencing a compound rate of annual growth in the incidence of autism of about 10% a year. Is that big? Well, the population of the United States over this period of time has grown by about 1%. Which means that the growth of the rate of incidence of autism is growing at about 10 times, sort of the pace of the population here in the United States. So this is kind of a big deal. Within that 1 out of 36 children, 4 out of 5 of them, tend to be girls. Tend to be boys. Only 1 out of 5 are girls. And there is a wide spectrum, of autism. You know, you could be at the very sort of high end of the spectrum, which, we used to refer to as Asperger's syndrome, or you could be at the very low end of the spectrum, which is now referred to as being profoundly autistic. And I would categorize my son Jack sort of in that category, low functioning, nonverbal. A lot of these kids, like my son, have seizure disorders. So this is not a situation like an Elon Musk running Tesla or Sam Bankman-Fried inventing the largest cryptocurrency network in the world. We're dealing with impaired individuals who are not going to be starring on The Doctor anytime soon.
Thank you so much for sharing your personal experience as well as those statistics. That's very, very helpful to everyone listening in. So a lot of families, as you said, are impacted, especially emotionally and financially. How did you initially approach financial planning for your family after receiving your son's diagnosis, and how has that evolved over the years?
The financial planning aspect of this is you get a diagnosis at age 2 that your kid has autism, and, I would equate it to running 100 miles an hour with your hair on fire. There is no planning because it's not like you've got 18 years to plan for your kid to go to college and you set up a 529 program. It's not like you're planning for your retirement in 40 or 50 years and you set up a 401k or an IRA or something like that. you know, it's like you get hit by a car. It's an accident. You don't know that this is going to happen. So you're sort of handling this on the fly. And, you know, the financial impact, on families, you know, I guess to some degree differ based upon where they were at the time of the diagnosis. You know, some families are in better shape than others. The financial impact, you know, on families with autism is significant. You know, I've seen statistics that, you know, the estimated cost of raising a, you know, quote unquote typical child to age 17, you know, before college, is about maybe $250,000. The cost of raising a child with autism up until age 17, you know, is thought to be about $2 million, you know, about 10 times the amount. Now, why is that? Well, you're dealing with a lot of intense therapy, either a home-based program or a center-based program, in order to try to get your kid, you know, back on track. And that's one of the issues with autism, that you know, you get the diagnosis and you just can't believe that there's something wrong with your kid that's going to affect them for the rest of their life. So you're not fully accepting that this is a lifelong disability. You're, you know, convinced that you're going to hit the lottery, and that with an intensive amount of therapy and education, you know, you're going to be one of the successful families that beats this thing. But the process of executing that home-based or center-based therapy, which, you know, as I said, is very intensive, is that typically one parent is devoting, you know, his or her life to overseeing that. In most cases, that's the mom who's, you know, tragically made the decision, okay, I'm going to give up my career, I'm going to focus on my kid. And then so now this, you know, two-wage family, two-paycheck family is now a one-paycheck family. And that mom, you know, is now dedicated to working on her child's care. Now, maybe it's not a full-time gig. You know, maybe they've got the luxury of having some help. But that mom is now less likely to work outside the home. And if she is working outside the home, it's going to be a lot fewer hours than she worked, you know, before they had a child with autism. She's going to earn obviously less money than other moms that don't have children in these positions. So the financial impact on a family is significant. The ability to plan for it is negligible because, you know, like I said, it's like getting hit by a bus. That you're not planning for this kind of a diagnosis. It's not like, you know, your child's born, your child is fine, and 18 years from now, you're hoping your kid's going to go to Harvard. And you have to plan accordingly. It comes as a surprise. It comes as a shock. And so you just have to sort of roll with the punches and do the best you can.
Thank you so much for sharing that process with us. It sounds like you have a great plan in place and you've had a lot to learn and a lot to adapt along the way. What are some misconceptions or challenges families face when it comes to financial planning for children with special needs?
Well, you know, we talked about the availability of resources from a personal financial standpoint. And then I guess the thing that you've got to look at in terms of trying to advocate for your child is the resources that are available to try to help them get back on track. I'm happy to say that we're in a lot better shape today than we were 30 years ago when my wife and I, you know, started this process. And to a significant degree, we felt like we were pioneers, that we were plowing the fields. And remember that, you know, the rate of incidence 50 years ago was 1 in 5,000. Now it's 1 in 36. So that hockey stick rate of growth you know, has caused a lot of improvements to be made in trying to, you know, help and advocate for these families and these kids. So, for example, one of the things that we did first off, you know, my wife and I at the time, you know, were completely dumbfounded and blindsided by this. And so started doing some research and realized that there was a complete dearth of services. And so that required children in that age, you know, going back 30 years to start home-based programs. So, you know, you start a home-based program at age 2, and you're going to run that for a couple of years, probably into age 5 or 6. But then you'd love to be able to avail yourself of a center-based program. But center-based programs, by and large, didn't exist. And you know, there were a couple of shining examples around the country. There was a world-famous doctor out in California by the name of Ivar Lovas, who was sort of created what's known as an ABA approach, the Applied Behavior Analysis approach to education. And there were a couple of world-class schools in New Jersey, Princeton Child Development and the Alpine Learning Institute, that were thought to be, you know, the models. And so what my wife and I decided to do is try to set up a group in the New York area, Westchester County. And we joined forces with a dozen other families that were kind of in the same boat. And we started a foundation and we raised a couple of million dollars and we literally built a school for autism, you know, from the ground up. We hired a group called the Devereaux Foundation out of Philadelphia. And they had some expertise in this area, and they ran the school for us. And they still do to this day. They've renamed themselves the Devereaux Cares. Originally, the school was called the Devereaux Millwood Learning Center. And we were educating 48 children, age 5 through 28, on the autism spectrum. So the dearth of resources 30 years ago caused people like us to say, okay, well, you know, that's not acceptable. But again, because we're, you know, typical type A plus obnoxious New Yorkers, we decided we would try to bend the curve and do something about that. And we, you know, we started a school that, you know, our child attended, you know, for age 5 into maybe age 16 or 17. And so, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to look for resources, and if the resources aren't there, you've got to create them. And then I guess the other thing that you've got to sort of keep in mind is that you may have other children that it's not fair to them to sort of put their lives on hold because you've got this, you know, this crisis that you're dealing with. You've got a special needs child. So at the same time, you've got to then try to raise your typically developing children and help to educate them and give them the love and attention they deserve and do softball and basketball and soccer and do all that stuff and try to save, you know, set up the 529s for them to go to college and you know, eventually marry them off. I've got my first wedding that we're planning later this year in October. And at the same time, you know, plan for your own retirement. You'd like to be able to, you know, live long enough to retire at some point, you know, 40 or 50 years down the road. So you, life doesn't stop because you've got, you know, a special needs child. You've still got to run that normal life track at the same time that you're trying to, you know, provide care for your special needs child. So, all of those issues it can be overwhelming at times. Well, frankly, it's overwhelming a lot of the time. But you just, you know, you do the best you can and get it done.
Bill, there's clearly a lot to think through when developing a financial plan for a family impacted by autism. As we come to the end of our conversation, I want to ask, as our financial advisors are working with these families, do you have any advice for how they can best support these families?
Yeah, I mean, I really think that, you know, turning lemons into lemonade here. I'm going to put it into that category. There's a business opportunity here for, you know, a financial advisor who has the right mindset, that isn't scared by, you know, everything that I've just talked about, and has the personal empathy to help special needs families develop sort of a professional financial network of advisors that they need to avail themselves of. So you've got this situation, you know, that's multifaceted across many levels. So here you are as a financial advisor, and you might be a CFA or a CFP, and, you know, you understand investments, and that's fine, but that's only a small piece of the needs that a special needs family has. So, for example, they have legal needs, guardianship papers, special needs trust, things of that nature. So you need an attorney that understands the special needs community. You're an investment professional. Like I said, you might be a CFA or a CFP or something like that. But what about accounting needs for developing special needs trusts and the like? So having a CPA with the expertise in this area would be very helpful. The insurance market. You may not be a qualified insurance agent, but there's life insurance, there's health insurance, there's long-term care insurance, there's understanding what's going on in terms of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. So having some knowledge of the insurance industry is helpful as well. And then there's the whole medical, you know, community. Having, I guess, starting with a pediatric neurologist and then talking about developmental experts and dentists and psychologists and psychiatrists. And, you know, we as investment people don't know all of those things. So I've always said, reach out in your community and develop a trusted network of a handful of these people. And then as you are working with a special needs family, if they're saying, well, you know, I really need a lawyer to set up guardianship papers. I really need an accountant to help me set up a special needs trust. I really need an insurance expert who can do X, Y, and Z. Well, you say, well, as a matter of fact, I've got a person like that, and you give out the referral. Now, why would you want to do that? Because those referrals will come back to you tenfold. That is, that lawyer or that accountant or that insurance professional comes across the same special needs family that's looking for some investment help, then they'll refer that family back to you. Now, the way you build this as a business is through philanthropy. And just using my own situation as an example, when we set up the Foundation for Empowering Citizens with Autism, and then eventually Extraordinary Ventures New York, the two autism charities that I was involved in helping to found, we would periodically run fundraisers, you know, cocktail parties, dinner dances, you know, benefit journals, that kind of thing, in order to raise money for the things that we're doing. And so you, as the financial advisor in your community, would learn about the different groups that are doing things like this, and you would get involved. You would take a journal page, an ad in the journal. You would, you know, take a table at a dinner dance or at the cocktail party and whatever. You would get a hold of the board of directors and offer to come in and give a presentation on, you know, what you know about financial planning for a special needs family. And those things will result in referrals and result in business. So as difficult as, you know, the situation is, I think there's a real opportunity for an enterprising financial advisor who's looking to do good here and you know, has the right empathetic tone to their personality. This I think is potentially a very potentially strong business opportunity.
Phil, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for all that you do for the autism community.
It is my pleasure. you know, this has been a journey that I've been on now for 30 years. It's a humbling experience. It really points to the importance of health and the fragility of life. And this is a situation in which there's very much an emphasis upon collaboration. No one person, no one family can get this thing done. If you reach out and are working with good people and good families, you can advocate for your own kid and for the community as a whole. You know, in a lot of ways, my wife and I feel blessed, that we've, you know, we're in a position where we have the resources and network to be able to help, you know, our son, Jack, and, you know, countless other families that have needed the assistance over the years. So again, Siobhan, I thank you very much for the opportunity to allow me to talk a little bit about some of the things that my wife Elise and I have done over the years, and I'm hoping that that's helpful to, you know, to some of the folks that are listening to this call. So thank you again.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.